Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, welcome to Going Off Track.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm Jonah.
I'm Brad.
And we're at Brad's apartment. I thought Brad was playing with an Etch-a-Sketch, but it's an iPad in a child protective enclosure.
Case. Yeah. It also doubles as a stand for those long plane rides.
Nice. I like it. It looks very durable.
It probably is. It hasn't been tested too much, but it does look ridiculous.
It does look ridiculous. Speaking of ridiculous, we have a ridiculous podcast for you. And by ridiculous, I mean ridiculously funny.
It is a good one.
And amazing. Today on the podcast, we had Riley Gale and Chris Ulsh from Power Trip. Riley is a singer. Chris used to play guitar and now plays drums. And they were in town supporting Obituary. Obituary and someone else. Who's the other band that played that show? Some other legendary metal band. Why can I not remember this? I was at the show.
I don't know. I could look it up on my iPad.
But... it's okay. They were just on tour with Obituary and some other huge metal band. They are actually currently on the road with Cannibal Corpse and Gate Creeper. I kind of became friends with Riley through Twitter. And he just seemed like a super... we just had a lot of the same friends and started chatting. And so we've been trying to do this podcast for a while. Power Trip has become a really successful band. They after this podcast, they actually won Best Metal Song of the Year at the Loudwire Awards. They performed Motorhead's We Are the Rogue Crew with Hatebreed's Jamie Josta. And their song Executioner's Axe is the official theme song for NXT TakeOver War Games, which is a WWE thing. And they're just on this North American tour now with Cannibal Corpse. So, they came by. This is an insane podcast. This is like the kind of podcast I love. We talk a lot about drugs. We talk a lot about faking being Jewish. We talk, there's an epic story about a party. I don't want to give too much away, but I will say, like, this is a good mix, I feel like, of, like, intellectual, like, heady stuff, Russian literature, and then just... partying, well, and then crazy tour stories, like them fighting other bands. I mean, it's
one of those that you don't need to know anything about the band or care, or even care about music.
Yeah,
it's just good entertainment.
Yeah, they're just super super good storytellers. Have just some insane stories. I hope we can get them back. And you should definitely check out their new album, Nightmare Logic. It's just super brutal, really good, catchy, thrashy metal. I feel like. I was talking about Power Trip the other day with someone. They were like, they're like the new band that like old school metal, fans like metal fans like, but also just like the old school guys that don't like newer bands.
Right.
They're like the band that like people are like, oh yeah, I could get into this.
They bridge the gap.
Yeah, they bridge a gap because it's reminiscent of like a band like Metallica or like these kinds of bands, but it's also like very modern. Like it's not throwbacky. It's just like, they're just a good band, great live band. And before we start, I just, as always, want to thank Pulse Music, for letting us record there. Steve Grywalski for producing this. And, if you want to do a podcast or do a music project, definitely check out Pulse Music.
We also need to thank all of our new patrons.
Yes.
As you should be aware, if you listen regularly, we have opened a Patreon account.
That is true.
where you can give us monthly donations. And in return, you'll get things like bonus episodes and outtakes and soon some swag. But go check it out, patreon.com/goingofftrack. You can see everything that's there. And you can also get to it from our website, too, goingofftrack.com.
Yes.
Links. Thanks to all of you who've joined. Thanks to those of you who continue to give us payments through Venmo, which is great.
Yes, thank you.
Ed McNulty, who's, I didn't forward it to you yet, but he's sent some more interesting comments.
Check out Ed's band, Beach Slang. They're a very good band. We love Ed. Thank you, Ed. I just talked to him yesterday. He's a
good guy.
He's a wonderful guy.
Yeah, check out Beach Slang for sure.
Yeah, check them out. I feel like they're always on tour. But yeah, check out Beach Slang. We'll get them on sometime, but not today. Today is Power Trip Day. So let's check out this episode with Riley and Chris from Power Trip.
It's going on.
Mustache back.
Yeah, dude.
I just got rid of mine.
Yeah.
It wasn't going anywhere. It just it looked like a dying caterpillar on my face.
No.
So like I give up.
It was your first try?
I need to shave like 2,000 more times so it comes in thick enough. Yeah.
Did you start late as a kid? Like you
I just come from a family that's not very hairy. Like I asked my dad and he was like, yeah, I couldn't grow a beard till like my mid-30s or whatever. So
yeah, no, that's the way I am, dude.
My dad had a big thick mustache when I was like young in like the late 80s, but it was he couldn't grow a full beard until I don't remember until like the mid-90s or something like that was when he would actually like rock a beard. So I've got a ways to go. But like my younger brothers, there aren't any like we just aren't hairy. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe makes you guys more evolved because I hear
right like a streamline
as the world gets more aquatic.
We're gonna like get more hairy or less hairier. Yeah.
Like that
we're
one.
We're gonna be like that episode of South Park where they're all like gray people.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all hairless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I was thinking that those characters in like the newer Star Wars. I don't know the Star Wars everyone hates the middle ones.
Oh,
you know that one like.
Picard?
No, that's Star Trek.
The Jar Jar Binks era?
It's not the Jar Jar Binks people. They go to this one planet that's all like all water. They're very tall and slithery-like.
Yeah.
I believe Boba Fett's dad is hanging out there. They're like senators. Yeah, those people.
I feel like people are probably listening to this getting so mad.
Why?
Because people are so into that stuff. They definitely know the answer.
You mean this planet, dick?
I just called it Star Trek, so.
I know a lot more about the movie Waterworld.
Yeah?
Yeah, than that. What do you know?
Well,
you know, the
lore in Waterworld runs deep.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, people talk about like renewable, like solar and all this. Mm. Like the desalinization of water, that's the future, man.
What it is wave technology.
Tell me more.
So like the idea is, have you seen those batteries? Those like camper batteries where you like throw them in a backpack and they charge based on the kinetic energy of your movement.
Right.
Like you can charge the battery shaking or whatever. Whoa. So the idea is to make big versions of those that they anchor in the ocean. And as the waves turn them up and down, they generate energy, free energy forever for life.
Cause the waves just keep coming.
I think it's called wave farming, like wave energy farming or something like that. And
who's doing that?
Some
Norway?
Like institute in Australia has one set up, like a small farm set up now, and there's actually two or three way. Like they have solar panels on some of them. They actually collect solar energy, and then they have kinetic energy, and like something else. I don't know, but it's basically they just get knocked around and then harness that kinetic energy and feed it out into back into the mainland or whatever.
That sounds promising.
Yeah, I thought what I did the way I found out about it was some guy came on Shark Tank.
Dude, that's how I found out.
Okay, so you saw that. And he was like, this is my dream. And they all shut him down.
Yeah.
And I was like, that guy's a genius. I was like,
Cubes didn't go for it?
Yeah, see, what I kind of thought. Because like, he had a really great idea. And I was like, this is really cool. And they were all like tripping on like the handheld battery thing. And because it was only like, he, you know, is a prototype, so like he can only charge like a an iPhone up to like 20% or something like that. So they didn't get it, but like I was like listening to this guy, I was like, give this motherfucker like a multi-million-dollar grant. Yeah. This is something that would like save the world. Did I mean, those aren't going in.
I have a feeling,
unless someone blows up the moon. We don't have to worry about
that. Did you see that episode? There's a guy like that on Shark Tank who tries to make like a hurricane inside of like.
I think I saw that one too.
Like, yeah. I've been watching a lot of Shark Tank lately. My work's been really slow.
I got back into it. It's pretty good.
Make a hurricane like that created energy and gold.
Yeah,
but it had to be like 100 miles high.
Right.
It had to be like, yeah. Everyone was like, dude.
But it's weird that they don't have the vision for like the scope of those things, especially a guy like Cuban. Because I like Mark Cuban.
I love Mark Cuban.
It's probably too much of a long play for those investors. They're like, this isn't going to pay out until I'm dead.
20-30 years. Yeah.
And they don't care about anyone.
That's true.
I like when he calls out the scams, though. That's the best.
Yeah, when he's like, this is bullshit. I actually
get onto Shark Tank with a scam?
Well, they'll just be like, sometimes they'll let them on there and they'll be like, well, this was already invented.
Or they'll be like, none of these studies are, you're using aversion therapy or this thing that like you didn't come up with that you're just citing and like you're making these false claims.
Yeah. But funny story about Mark Cuban is when I was a kid, we did the stock market game in school. And this was like right when it's showbiz.com was the website he got huge off of, right? It was like radio streaming, I think is what he invented. And I was just like looking in this paper because that's the way they do it. And they give you like, you know, X amount of dollars to invest in these companies. And I dumped every penny that I had into his company because it was like whatever day that I looked at the paper had the biggest gain on his stock. And I like won the state competition and got like third in the national. Whoa. And I didn't do a single move. Like the first day I was just like everything into this company. And then I just sat around and my teacher was like, well, you won state. You didn't do anything. Here's like $200 and like a trophy. And then now you get to like, now you're in the national competition. And I was like, okay. And then like, I just didn't do anything again. And then they're like, okay, you got third. And then I got like some other prizes and shit like that. I was in like seventh grade, I think. But then it came back around. And because Cuban bought the Mavs like 3 or 4 years after that. I think he bought them in, what, 99 or 2000?
Sounds about right.
Something like that. Yeah. So, like, just a couple years after that. And then I was like, hey, I know that guy. So, that's
Cubes.
Just
like, yeah. You and Cubes.
Did you see
me
the one
and Cubes go way back?
Where someone calls him Cubes?
Yeah.
And kicks him out?
Jonas.
No.
Dude, I think I sent it to Benny.
I'm not into it.
Yeah, some guy's like, Cubes. And he's like, you just call me Cubes? Yeah. He's like, I'm out. It's so awesome.
I mean,
I didn't know he hated that.
I guess he doesn't. Yeah. I guess like he doesn't want some dude pitching him. Like it's like a respect thing.
You know what? That too. But that actually makes sense because like I listened to this radio station that's like a sports radio, but it's like a bunch of like chucklehead guys, and they call him Cubes. But when he calls in, they're like very like, yeah, Mark, how's it going? Like they tone it down a lot, and they're pretty goofy most of the time. So he must not like that nickname either. But
he might run for president, too. Huh? Cubes?
I'd vote for him.
I can call him Cubes.
Yeah, right? yeah.
I did write an email to Mark Cuban once.
Did he respond? Because
somebody responded.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd read an article.
I've heard
that
he's pretty good about it.
Mark Cuban will respond to any email.
Yeah.
So I was like, fuck it. I'm going to write Cubes. I did use the formal Mark Cuban.
What did you write to him?
I just wrote like, and I'm kind of into Mark Cuban. I think he's cool. So I wrote like, yo, you know, I'm a Nets fan, but you know, I like what you're doing over there and the vibe, like cool, good work. You know, have
this
a good
response.
One.
Condolences on the Nets.
he was like, this was still when they were all right.
Okay.
Like
okay.
This is not recently
when
it's been dark, bleak times. But, yeah, and I got a response. I don't know if it was, you know, from his office or dictated, not read. I'm not sure. But, yeah, it just said, like, hey, you know, cool. Thanks for writing. Good luck with the Nets, you know, next year.
That's cool.
Like, have a good one.
I wonder if he still does that.
Yeah.
I'm going to say what's up.
I mean, it probably came from, like, a Yahoo account, too. I don't know if he took that seriously.
One time I saw he still like had a Yahoo account like or something like that.
What's his
What's
his email address?
Don't remember now. I could go back into the files.
Cubes82@gmail.com.
Michael Finley rules with a Z.
Yeah.
Something like that. Are you guys Mavs fans?
Ice cold Cubes. Yeah, I like the Mavs. I mean, it sucked kind of watch, like, they're not great now. I'm a Pistons and Mavs fan, and they're both pretty trash. But, like, I was really into, you know, the championship Mavs team. I watched pretty much that whole season. I went to the last home game where they basically, they won in Miami, but it was like a huge, it was like basically a dagger.
Upset.
It was a dagger yeah. game. It was a game five. And then they went to Miami and won it. But it was really great watching that whole run, because they were, you know, they had Dirk, but it was like a very much a like old school team mentality. Like JJ Barea contributed mm-hmm. a ton. Jason Terry had huge like
huge,
shots,
huge.
like
huge.
With the loudest I've ever seen any stadium in a sporting event was Terry hit this huge 3-pointer to go up like 6 points. He hit like two back to back threes that just took all the gas out of Miami at the end of the game. And like when that second one went off, it looked like a bomb explode. Everyone was just like deafening.
It was cool.
Yeah. I was like first row. My friend had gotten tickets because he like works for ESPN as like a production assistant when they come and do events in Dallas. And he had gotten tickets, invited me, and we were on like the first row of like the second spot, like right at half court. We had beautiful seats. It was awesome. Yeah. So, but Nick, our guitar player, actually got a terrible tattoo that is supposed to be like the championship trophy, but it looks like a fucking like Dixie cup with like like the little Mavs, like the M basketball on it. But it just looks really bad.
It kind of fits.
It almost looks like he got it as like he is not a fan and lost a bet.
Oh, like tattoo. Ironic tattoo.
Yeah, like almost like ironically bad.
I mean, scale of like basketball dude tattoos, maybe it actually fits in.
Yeah,
because those dudes
players have some bad tattoos.
Tattoos.
Yeah.
They're the worst.
I'm a Rockets fan, not a Dallas fan.
Yeah, nice. He's a Rockets fan.
That's bright times ahead. Bright times ahead.
Oh, yeah.
Should be fun.
I'm the only person in the band that's not from Dallas.
Okay.
Where are you from?
I grew up in Houston and then moved to Austin.
Nice.
Do you feel like, is there like a Dallas bias in your band? Like Dallas rules with a Z kind of thing?
Yeah, @gmail.com for sure.
Oh, that was Cuban's email. That was it.
Dallas rules.
Dallas rules.
No, like, I mean, we say we're from Dallas, but like, We're not like sticking it in people's faces and stuff like that, you know. I mean, everybody watches sports in the band and stuff, and like, you know, like one time Nick wore like a Cowboys jersey at a show in Philadelphia, and then he took it off and someone like promptly stole it and probably threw it in the garbage, you know. And then there was another time when we were on this Lamb of God tour where I was like, I was trying to like just bring some like lighthearted brevity to the show, and I was like, all right, Philly, we're all Cowboys fans, I hope you'll forgive us. And it was like, boom! Yeah. Like, fuck you! Like, lost the crowd. Like, we did really well on that tour, but like, two different people go up to Hood, our merch guy, and they're like, man, your band was pretty cool, but as soon as he said the Cowboys, he might as well have Zeke Heil on stage. And then like another guy came, a completely different guy, was like, that might as well have been Hitler up there giving a speech. And I was like, oh my God. So I learned my lesson there.
Well, if worst merch numbers of the tour also. Yeah,
worst merch numbers of the tour, like, just shot myself right in the foot on that one. I mean, I you know, like, my thing is I don't get emotional over sports.
No,
like, I like it.
You shouldn't.
And I like good narratives and stuff, but it's like, if you get like men who cry over football games, like if a certain like member of our band, if like the Cowboys lose, he's mad for like 2 days. Like, and it's like a legitimate anger that he carries around with him.
Yeah.
And so I don't get it. I come from like, my grandpa was a career college football coach, like all around the Midwest and stuff.
Cool.
Like coached at like Iowa State, Wyoming, like took Wyoming to a Orange Bowl 1 year.
He was the head coach?
Yeah.
Wow,
he actually retired as Wayne State's athletic director, Wayne State in Detroit, mm-hmm. and like the whole athletic wing is named after
what
him
was
and
his
stuff
name?
Like that. His name's Vernon Gale. Yeah, I never really got to know him. He died when I was 2, I think.
That's a beautiful college football name, too.
Yeah, Vernon Gale. Yeah. And like, I mean, perfect. We have some like gorgeous like photos of him coaching, like just these really cool old timey. Like,
very cool.
Yeah. He's in a couple books, and like, I've met, you know, a couple like people that knew who he was, you know, just from like Detroit area being like, oh yeah, I know, I, like friends who had gone to Wayne State, like seeing his name around and stuff like that. So like I loved sports from a young age. So I guess I kind of got over that like emotional attachment to it too. But
if you could challenge any band to like a backstage festival, like touch football game, maybe not even touch.
Ooh,
maybe some you want to go full
we
on
would,
with.
We would be so competitive.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That would get weird pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think it would be one of those things where it like starts out fun. It's like Wedding Crashers where that guy's like whooping everyone. Like Nick would be like tackling people for real, and people would be like, "Yo, dude, chill out."
Hot rod.
Dude, I'd love to see you guys go up against Integrity.
Oh, we would smoke Integrity.
Yeah,
I feel like basketball, football, whatever.
You'd be a lot quicker.
I think we would dominate most bands in basketball. You know, like Code Orange. I'm talking to you. Rock you in a basketball game.
Yeah.
Football, whatever. Where blouses. You guys want to go? Yeah. Trying to think of like who would like outdo us.
Yeah, who do you think would like out aggro you?
Who would beat us?
Lamb of God?
No.
Too chill.
I bet Turnstile is good at some
sports. Like they probably whoop our ass in like
they're
soccer
all in better
or something.
Shape than us.
Yeah, there's got to be some band you guys. Yeah. I see the super heavy hardcore bands who bring their fucking like workout shit behind.
Yeah, but
you.
Those guys just have show muscles. You know, it's like they don't have any finesse on the court.
We got the playbook.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'd be like Nick, you're gonna run a button hook, and I'm gonna fucking dump that right into your numbers, and you're gonna fucking take off and get a 7 points.
Come on, boys. Annexation of Puerto Rico. Let's go.
The annexation of Puerto Rico.
We have a special segment on this podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Mystery friend.
Yeah.
And I got in touch with one of your friends. And you
we got to explain the game.
So this is a game. I have a couple prompts here for stories.
Okay.
And you have to, you can pass on telling the story, but you should.
No, I'll probably be full disclosure.
I have a bunch of stuff. And then you also have to guess who it is.
The friend.
So who we got the information from.
Yeah. This is so,
and this is
a great
actually
game.
An interesting one because this is a second generation friend. This is a friend of a friend.
Whoa.
Love that.
This is someone I don't actually know.
Okay.
But we have a friend in common.
Mystery friend.
The first one is, what's on the Mexi dips and chips?
Oh, is that like a quiz question?
Yeah. Okay, so the Mexi dips are chips. Mexi dips and chips are from Taco Bueno, and it's like they give you like a big pile of tortilla chips, and then they give you these tortilla cups, and they're filled with refried beans, queso, and guacamole, and you basically just go in on this like build your own kind of nachos thing.
That
and it's like Taco Bueno is like Texas's Del Taco or something, but I think it's better, and that is what is on it.
Okay.
It's combo number 5 on the menu if anyone's
number
wondering.
5. Got it. Yeah. What does the date July 4th, 2012 mean to you?
Is that when you had that crazy party at your old house?
Okay, I think I'm starting to put this together. Yeah. I was living with this girl, and we had just broken up like a month before, and I was like super depressed. And so I just said fuck it and spent like $600 on this 4th of July party. I had a big SpongeBob bounce house with like a water slide.
Gangster.
And it started at like 11 a.m. and ran until like 9 a.m. the next day. And I swear every friend that I've ever had in Dallas like cycled through the party at one point. Like my neighbors were showing up, and we had like we had probably trash going along our alleyway fence line that stretched for at least 20 feet. Just like there's a picture of a couple of us hanging out by it, but it was the most absurd party I've ever thrown in my life. It looked like it was like Project X. Like there was a midget there at some point. And then like I walked out.
A hired midget or just someone there to drink?
So, no, a guy just showed up.
Oh, okay.
And then like even like the like straight edge, like hardcore kids that I knew were like showing up because they were just like curious about this party.
Wow.
There was like there was a lesbian couple having sex on my front lawn, which I had never seen before. what else happened at that party? There was just a lot of madness.
Any animals?
Lots of dogs just hanging around. people were like smoking DMT in the backyard and just like this one girl. These guys are smoking DMT out of this pipe, and And this girl comes up and she's like drunk and she thinks she's hot shit. And she goes, oh, you guys are cool. You smoking weed? And like grabs the pipe and starts to light it. And everyone's like, no, no. And she goes, oh, that wasn't weed. And then she starts to like sort of like fall backwards really slowly, like very slow motion. I had to like kind of lay her down on the ground. And then she just kind of passed out. And she was fine because it's something where you kind of like blast off and go unconscious and then you wake up or whatever. It's like a 15-minute very intense trip. And but she ended up throwing up, and then my dog came over and ate the throw up.
Which one?
And then Tommy. And then she just kind of like got up and was like, I gotta go. And then she still hung out at the party for like 4 hours later. And then 2 weeks later, she thanked me because she said it was like the most enlightening experience she ever had and felt euphoric for like weeks afterwards.
Whoa.
Yeah. So
amazing.
So that was that party for sure. Yeah. That was July 4th, 2012.
Try some DMT,
also, I think I might
huh?
know who this is now.
Brad? No.
Is yeah, okay. That was at the party?
Yeah.
The okay. next one might help. The okay. next one is just called The Rule of Five.
Oh. Okay. yeah. The rule of five is not our concept. It comes from our friend Will from Detroit. And he claims that the perfect buzz for any party is being on five different substances.
Whoa.
So you can just mix and match whatever, but it's like you don't really want to go over five. But use your imagination on what those could
that's
be.
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, well, you know, like, not like
any more I mean, than three. And
I think that's and how I'm, many I've done. Like period. All time. Yeah.
I've done five drug. Period. Yeah. Well,
and this is not including alcohol.
Oh no, no, it includes. It's like any intoxicant. Like so, it could be alcohol, weed, and then
see the thing
use
that's tripping me up about this is number five. Because there's yeah. to me, there's like
he calls it
booze,
Planet Five,
weed,
right,
coke,
right,
and then like some kind of like mushroom or acid,
right,
fairly standard,
right.
course.
That's yeah.
well in my world
combo,
anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But number five,
that's dessert, baby.
Well, maybe oh, maybe I guess you go some painkillers or something like that, you know.
Use
like,
your,
that's
whatever.
Pretty, that's
you know,
pretty steady.
Ketamine,
that's all right.
Ecstasy. You know, like there's a lot of directions that could go in.
Because once
so.
You start getting to five, you gotta get a little bold.
I'll be honest.
Bold.
I have visited Planet Five many times, and it's actually pretty great. The scenery is wonderful.
The altered state of Drugachusetts.
Oh my god! All right, the last one I have is how Hood got his name.
Oh, okay. So. For those who don't know, Hood is our basically six member, like full time merch art guy. And he got his nickname. His nickname is actually Neighborhood. And when he was in like junior high, he played football. And anytime they would get disciplined in football, the coach had this route that they would have to run. And he would say, run the neighborhood, right? Well, Hood was such a fuck up that the guy just kept saying, you know, he'd end up being like, like, you know, 82, Neighborhood. And then it just got shortened. Like, Neighborhood became his nickname, and then it got shortened to Hood. So it's like this old football thing. And people are like, what, are you in a gang or something? And he's like, no, the story's way less interesting than that. But yeah, that's how he got the name.
Who do you think this is?
Yeah so you want to throw in a guess?
Okay, my guess.
Mystery friend.
I think I might have to say Charlie.
Yeah, I think Charlie.
Is it Charlie Wilhoit?
Or Tuna, someone that was at that party.
Yeah,
because the okay. Detroit question.
I'm trying to think who would know five. Yeah, oh yeah, that yeah maybe Tuna, maybe
Jonah.
Does
nice
Tuna have
one.
Another name or no?
Zach yes. Duty.
That's actually no. neither of those.
Oh shit!
Wow.
Okay, let me think a bit more.
Jonah, right. nice.
Who would have been at the
nice work
the party? Likes Taco Bueno. Knows the rule of five. And what was the other one you asked me? Oh, and, Hood's nickname. And knows Hood's nickname. Oh, my God.
Maybe James?
It sounds
it's
pretty...
not James Kubiar, is it?
No.
Okay. Okay.
I can tell you who connected us, if that would help.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, do that.
I hit up Fred Presario.
Oh.
And he put me in touch with this person.
That could be a lot of people.
Yeah, I guess that doesn't help at all.
Was it Logan?
Yeah.
Oh, Logan. Yeah, it's Logan. Yeah.
Okay.
Good one. Good one. Yes. Nice. Actually, I should have seen that coming.
Yeah.
That should have been my first guess. Thank you, Logan. Yeah.
That was a good that,
those were
yeah,
those, yeah, all those questions were all solid. Really
yeah.
good,
thank
too.
Thank you, Logan, very much.
Logan is the only person that I can think of that would put that much thought into something like this.
And they were really, yeah, they were really good.
Yeah, we've been texting all day, like sending
Hell
ideas.
Yeah. He rocks. I love you, Logan. What's up?
Have you ever met Logan?
I don't think so.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Good luck now. Now that he's married, he's just a pure homebody, but
yeah.
He actually is from the same like suburban area in Dallas that I'm from.
Okay.
And like, you know, remember back in like the 90s where there was like a huge heroin epidemic in North Dallas and Plano and stuff?
I had friends from Plano.
Logan is like an OG like Plano guy. I used to see like a lot of that really dark stuff. I was a little younger, so.
So that wasn't just like an inside edition thing. That was legit.
A real deal like problem, yeah. Because Plano is basically a middle upper class like suburb. And so, like, all these kids just had money and a public school system and nothing to do, and they just all ended up hooked on junk. So, yeah. Logan never was, though, so he's great.
Are you guys from anywhere where Friday Night Lights took place?
No, I think Friday Night Lights is based on a small school north of Austin. I think it's close to Austin. My parents were really into that show, so I've seen it a few times. And I can't remember the city, but it is a real city. Like, you know, like King of the Hill, Arlen?
Yeah.
Is actually a mix-up of the first place I ever lived, Garland, Texas, which is it's based on two suburbs around Dallas, Garland and Arlington.
So okay.
That's like a portmanteau of the two.
Arlington's
one
where
time,
the Rangers
One time my
play?
Mom asked me, where is Arlen, Texas? Yeah. And I said, that is not a real place, mother. And I explained it to her. And she's like, oh, well, that's neat. So that means they're kind of from where we're from. And I was like, yes. It is a very good depiction of Arlington and Garland. So, yeah.
How prevalent is, like, you walk into a bar, like maybe like a heavy theme bar and like Pantera's playing?
Pretty frequently, but yeah. I also don't go out to a lot of bars very often. I'm not like a big social drinker when I'm home. So, but I mean, it happens. Sporting events, absolutely. You're not going to a sporting event and not hearing Pantera. But
what do you like to do in your home?
I like to just like read and hang out with my dogs.
Yeah.
You know, like catch up on TV and stuff like that. Because when we're out on the road, it's like such a social thing. You know, it's nice to go from like full on being like social every day with a lot of your friends and just people that you're meeting and stuff. And then when I'm home, I can kind of do this like isolation contemplation sort of thing. And so it's a good balance. And then if I feel like going out, you know, mostly if a show's going on and I've got friends from out of town and stuff like that. But you know, when I'm at home, I'm mostly kind of just trying to get my like mental health back together.
Logan mentioned that you're also a fan of Russian literature. Is that true?
Actually, that's not true. I'm more so into like French like postmodernist stuff. Now, I've read some like Russian lit, and my friend Will Evans, who runs a publishing company, has given me some books that he does a lot of translations for the first time, like having books published in English for the first time. So he's got a lot of really interesting stuff, but probably the best book I read by him was this book called Sphinx, and it's this genderless love story from 86. So the woman who wrote it, Anne Jareta, I think is how you pronounce it, she writes it all from like a completely like, it's in first person, but they never use it, like all the pronouns are gender neutral, and like you don't know. One character is a DJ, the other is like a cabaret dancer, and you don't know through the whole book whether one's male, female, one or the other. Huh. It's super beautiful. It's a very really well written book, and it was just published in English for the first time like 2 years ago. But Russian stuff, I'm trying to remember what I have read. I've read some Dostoevsky, and oh God, who's the other big one? I'm spacing right now. But I like everything. I just read like what friends recommend to me. You know, I had a big American lit kick for a while, and I was into like heavy critical thinking stuff. Now I actually just read a lot of comics because they're really easy to read in the van. It was getting too hard to read small text in a moving van, and so like comics make it a lot easier. And I think there's a lot of stuff you can say with it. You can get pretty deep with the medium, you know, because you have moments for like visual symbolism and stuff like that. And you know, there's a lot of really great writers who, you know, write to like pulpy fun stuff, but there's a lot of writers who like to write really deep, you know,
philosophical
kind of stuff.
Are there any comics in particular you like
I read a lot. Let's see. What am I reading right now? I'm reading this one series called Pop Gun War by this guy, Daryl Falrymple. And he has this very, like, ethereal style. It's almost like his books have this dream logic kind of thing to him. And it's really cool. It's almost like an urban ethereal thing. Like,
do you get stoned?
Oh, yes. Okay. Very much so. So I like that series a lot. I really like stuff by Brandon Graham. Rick Remender and Jonathan Hickman put out a lot of material, but they're two writers I really like. But I mostly read anything that's recommended to me. There's a guy who's based in Brooklyn. His name's Michelle Fife, who does this series called Copra. And it's kind of like a old Suicide Squad kind of like shout out. Like, a lot of the characters kind of heavily resemble other characters from like DC and Marvel and stuff, but he just has a lot of like old school fun to it. It's got like a very loose drawing style that almost looks like, you know, like your friend from high school who's really good at drawing, but he presses everything himself, writes it, inks it, colors it,
cool,
has his own press. But like, I really like his series a lot. That's probably my favorite right now. But I could talk about comics all day. I won't, though. But
and you had kind of, we had been talking over Instagram or something.
Yeah.
And you had said you had been working on some stories.
I've got a few stories. I don't know what I want to use them for. The one big thing I would really like to do in some format is write a tour story. Like, I think people are really blowing it by not trying to do some kind of movie or book that really captures what it's like to be touring in a modern band. So like, my idea is really get a bunch of my friends together, write down all the ridiculous tour stuff that we've happened, and then it would basically, the story would be about this like up and coming band that gets a opportunity to get to a big gig, and then they've got to like go on like a week long tour to get out there, and then you kind of have this Spinal Tap meets Detroit Rock City sort of like, you know, fiasco going on. But you could deal with a lot of the like tropes and stuff that comes from being in a band, you know, like the insecurities that maybe like a bassist has, or like, you know, like all these things, like each member could have some kind of problem that they overcome that, you know, other musicians could relate to. And then in the meantime, you have a bunch of gags about what it's like to, you know, stay at someone's really shitty apartment, or like, you know, all you want to do is go to bed and then you're surrounded by like 12 people partying or whatever, you know. I'll tell you the idea. If it were a movie, this is how it would open. It would open up to a wide top-down shot of a van driving through a desert, and then it would at sunrise, and it would slowly pan through the back of the van, and you would see everyone like sprawled out asleep and stuff, except for the driver. And the driver is driving and also masturbating to porn on his phone with a towel over himself. And then right as he's about to climax, the passenger wakes up and he's like, "What the fuck are you doing?" And then he nearly crashes and kills everyone while he's climaxing and driving the van.
Which is
based on a true story, not from our band.
Yeah.
Not from our band, but that is a true story. But I mean, it would just like, that's a movie that would write itself, you know?
I've thought about that a lot, and I can't figure out the way to, like, you know how sometimes it's hard to like explain to somebody who doesn't tour without sounding like an asshole?
Right.
Like,
because you're like, it's not as glamorous as people think it is. And that's what I would want to kind of get across, is be like, this is hard.
I've been working on this novel for literally for 20 years.
And the Brad, same idea, generally?
Yeah, yeah.
But Brad, I mean, it's, somebody hasn't
70s.
Really picked that
so
up, you know?
This, and it was all from this one moment when we were driving in the middle of the night and there was a fucking owl, a white horned owl, like 3 feet tall in the middle of the road. And we almost crashed the van. It was just me and one other person saw it. And like for 3 hours after that happened, I was just sitting there thinking about like how fucking surreal it was, how like people never like, you know, no one's going to believe me.
Yeah.
And like, and then my vision of this movie in my head at that point was more like a really surreal art film. Like just all
you
these
moments. You could totally go
that
route too.
You know?
Yeah. I just think it's one of those things where there's so many like great untold stories that you could kind of like you know, build a movie around. Yeah. Those are sort of the gags or the bits or whatever, but then you have this overarching thing where this band is desperately trying to make to some huge show that's like their big break or whatever.
Did you see Green Room?
Yeah, and it, which is great because that was kind of, you know, obviously in like a horror direction, this would be more like a kind of comedy thing, but like I thought they did a really good job, you know, minus the like siphoning gas and like some of the, like a few things that were a little off. Like it should have been set in like the 90s, not in like modern times, but I thought it was a really great movie.
It might be set in the 90s.
See, there you go. Yeah.
Well, Brad's going to have to do that because he toured in like the Jim Crow South. He had a lot of really interesting deep touring.
And mine is based on a big record deal. That's instead of the gig, it's based on a big fat record deal. But so it has to be the 90s.
I'll say this. If it were going to be a movie, I would like try to license all the music from Motorhead. And the band would essentially be playing like Motorhead tracks, like maybe even call the band like Iron Fist or something like that, because I think that's like the quintessential, like at least like you could have that be relatable where it would sound and feel like maybe like a metal band but still sort of be kind of catchy and accessible.
Well, and then even the theme song could be Road Crew.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's just perfect. For the, maybe that title,
that's exactly title? Well, I thought it could be a play on Spinal Tap and call it This Is Iron Fist.
I like that.
But Road Crew would be really good too. And that's a song that's have to be in it.
Maybe,
you know?
This Is Iron Fist : Road Crew.
The Road Crew.
Subtitle.
Yeah, I'll see if I can get Christopher Guest to sign off on that.
Yeah. I think you can't, like, if I watched this film though and I saw like fucking Channing Tatum was the bass player or something, I'd be pretty bummed out.
Right.
Like, you gotta
get
some like
it would have to be guys freshies. That look,
he could be the drummer though.
Yeah. Yeah.
He'd be one of those, like...
He could be a guitar player.
He'd be a real
pounder.
He could
be a lead guitar player.
Channing Tatum would play in, like, a new metal band where those guys play just really slow, but, like, to pick their arms up super high.
The music would have to be legit if I did it in, like, a movie form. But I've thought about, like, any medium. I just kind of want to start getting some of the ideas down.
There's no way the dudes in Motorhead have a lot of money. I bet you could get those songs.
Well, I mean...
A metal band is good, too, because you're going to have a lot more, like... The contrast between like a fucking hard rock band and then like doing your laundry,
Right? Yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, just really simple stuff, or you know, like I'm trying to think of some other. I had like a few really good like bits to it, but I'm spacing
right now.
You don't
want to give them away either.
Yeah, I don't want to give all my proprietary material away.
Exactly.
No.
Mark Cuban, talking
a lot of big Hollywood writers. Listen
back
to
off.
The show.
And then I've got one idea for like a sci-fi thing that I haven't quite fleshed out yet. And then I think one day I would like to write about my one time I faked being Jewish and went on a birthright trip for 2 weeks, and it was a really great experience. So I thought maybe one day if I'm really bored, I could like write a memoir about that.
That's fucking
but
funny.
It was really eye-opening and like beautiful and like not in any some like weird Zionist propaganda type of way either. You know, it really
got
out
there. Wait, you faked being Jewish and went to Israel?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Wow.
How old were you?
I was 22.
Okay. So they don't ask for any kind of documentation?
No, you just kind of, I was just like... I'm from Texas, but I'm Jewish, and I don't know any other Jewish people, but I want to come learn about my culture. And
and
like,
you're like a blue unicorn.
Board.
They're like,
come, please,
people from every state.
We need one of you.
But when I got there, so they tell you pay for everything, just show up at JFK for the flight. But you know, the IDF, there's no TSA. You go through the IDF straight up, and you walk up there, and they're like, all right, I'm going to ask you a few questions. Do you speak Hebrew? No. Do you read Hebrew? No. Are you Jewish? Yes. Have you had a bar mitzvah? Yes. Where? My parents' backyard? And they're like, that's not a bar mitzvah. And I was like, it was really informal. And they're like, go over to that line over there. And there was like this group of like 40 or so people they like profiled to go through their bags and stuff. And this is like the craziest thing that's probably ever happened to me. I was on the trip with two friends. One of them was actually Jewish and he was the counselor. He's the guy who invited me, who was like, if you just say you're Jewish, I'll make sure you get through. And when you sign up for it, there's like an online form with a drop down box that says, how would you describe your Judaism? And like, it's got all the like, you know, different branches and stuff. And then there's one option that says just Jewish. And I was like, that's me. Yeah, bingo. So my friend Danny invited me, but there's another guy from Boston who was also faking it. My friend Mickey. And so we
Mickey
get
the Jew.
There was two fingers on this trip.
Yeah. Also, Please, no one sue me for fraud or anything like that. I had a really great time. I learned a lot about the culture. It was wonderful. But so they separate us both. And this guy goes away and takes our bags and puts them on the plane, like an airline worker. And he comes back and the soldier starts yelling at him in Hebrew. And we couldn't figure it out. But basically what the guy had done was thought our bags were clear. They were going to go through our bags, but he thought they were clear to go on the plane. So he goes and puts them on the plane. Comes back, gets yelled at. We didn't think of anything of it, really, except that it was kind of weird. Then they ask us some questions. They let us go. We get on this, like, 12 or 13-hour flight. We land in Tel Aviv. Then we have to get in a bus and drive 3 hours to the top of the state. We get into this hotel at, like, 1 or 2, and they want us to do, like, an hour-long orientation. Everyone's, like, grumpy and pissed off and just wants to go to bed. So we're finally going to bed, like, around 4 or something, the first night after traveling for the better part of a day. And I'm drifting off to sleep, and I hear Mickey start like screaming. He's like, "Oh fuck, shit, what the fuck?" And I'm like, "What, man?" And he starts pulling out enormous fireworks from his luggage, like mortar shells and rockets, because his friend in Boston knew that he was going to be gone for the 4th of July, and was like, "Hey, take these fireworks and set them off before you leave." And he was like, "Cool," and threw them in his luggage and forgot about them. And this was some, like, take down a plane level fireworks kind of thing. And if that airline worker hadn't fucked up and taken our bags on the plane, we'd probably be in Guantanamo still or something like that. So we did the smart thing and set them off in Haifa on the 4th of July. And then we're like, "Oh yeah, those sound like missiles." So we had to like run through the city for like 2 miles just to get away from the scene or whatever. So yeah, we accidentally smuggled fireworks into Israel and somehow didn't get caught.
And lit them off.
Way to go, IDF.
Yeah. Good work.
Wow. Yeah.
The illusion of safety, huh?
That's intense.
Yeah. But overall, it was really fun. I had a good time. There's some really good people on the trip, you know. We got to ask some hard questions and got some decent answers from people, and it was cool. It wasn't like
ballsy. Respect.
I had to fake the funk for 2 weeks, and there was this one guy who was like a very like very stereotypical New York Jew, love the Knicks kind of thing, and like he did not buy it at all. Like, he was so on to me, and I was like, "I don't know what to tell you, man. Like, you know, like, I'm sorry, but like, someone told me I was Jewish, and here I am." So, but that's really what it was, and like, he kind of let it go. But and then there was like there was a really cool group of girls on the trip there from like the Bay Area. I think they knew and just didn't care, you know. But I think they're a lot stricter now. But when I did it in 2008, which is also the year we started the band, so I had demo tapes and gave them.
Nice.
There's like half the demo Power Trip demo tapes are just floating around in Israel or in a trash heap or something like that. But that was like the first time I had ever left, you know, the United States. So it was a really great trip.
That's fucking epic.
I had a good time. But maybe I'll write that story down one day too.
Yeah,
there's a lot of really crazy stuff that happened, not just that. But yeah, it was fun. And so I'd hope to get something written someday. We'll see.
I saw you guys. We played a show together.
Yeah.
At South by.
Yeah, yeah.
A few years ago.
Mm-hmm. At Red 7.
At Red 7. Yeah.
Is that South by Southwest? Right?
South by Southwest in Austin.
Yep.
Yes. And it was like some kind of Brooklyn vegan show. But I remember watching you guys, and I had a question, like, as like someone who's like a front man, or like, do you ever, like, I feel like when you play an instrument, sometimes you can just kind of like turn your back to the crowd or like not really feel. Do you always have to be like amped up? Do you sometimes just be like, ugh, like,
I just don't feel right not. You know, there's days where I feel terrible and don't perform as well, right? But it's like, to me, it's not the best analogy, but I always think of it like a professional athlete. They have to go out there and they need to like play hard for the 30 minutes or so that they're on the court or whatever. So to me, like, a set is, you know, my exercise for the day. So I might as well go as hard as I can for the whole thing, because that's what the people deserve as far as the show goes. And we're a high energy band. You know, I mean, trust me, if I thought I could do a band that was actually successful, I would have picked something way softer, because it's hell on my body. But like, there's something that as soon as I walk up on stage, it's just, you gotta go. You know, you gotta go from 0 to 10, or at least try your best. Because, you know, to me, those are the only kind of, for a lot of times, those are the only kind of shows that, you know, bring any excitement to me, is when I know somebody is working their ass off, you know. There's plenty of bands that I love that I won't go see just because, you know, I kind of know the show might be kind of boring, you know, something right. like that. So but I've just always had this mentality that I just have to, you know, practically kill myself or break out my back, but it always seems to be worth it. And I think that it says a lot for the band, and everybody else in our band tries really hard too. You know, we all bust our asses, and I think a lot of people respect that. So
have you gotten any like crazy injuries or anything?
Oh yeah. I fell off the stage at the Akron in 12 or 13. What year was the Boston bombing? Was that 12 or 13?
I don't know.
It was like a couple days before, because when we were in Worcester was like a couple days later was when they caught the guy.
All right.
And but that's why I remember it. But I had fallen backwards off the stage, and it's a pretty tall stage. And when I thought I was going to hit my head, that's how long the fall was. So I kind of covered the back of my head, kind of being like, oh, I'm falling. This is going to hurt. And when I landed, I actually landed on the corner of the step going up to the stage. Ooh. And my lower back. So all my body weight just went right into one point, basically. Jeez. Right where my spine and my kidney were.
Ooh.
And I bounced off of it. And it was the worst pain I've ever been in. It had to be the closest thing to like getting shot. Like I thought I had ruptured my kidney. I couldn't see. It was like I was white hot, blinded with pain. Thought I was going to piss and shit and puke and pass out all at once.
Hey.
I somehow limped through the set. Afterwards, everyone was like, are you okay? Do you need to go to the hospital? I was like, no, if I drop dead, just get me back to Texas. So my parents don't have some like insane New York medical bill and I'm still dead. So I just rolled with it. But I mean, for a long time, it's really messed me up, and I still have a lot of chronic pain from it, but I just have to power through it. You know, I mean, I'll probably be in a wheelchair by 45 or something. And I don't have health care, so I have to do yoga and try and take care of it in other ways and stuff. But this tour so far has been feeling pretty good, so that's a plus. But sometimes it can really flare up, and it's hard. But that's the worst injury I've ever gotten. One time I was headbanging and hit Blake in the nose and broke his nose. Did it to Wetzel, our bass player, too.
Do we have any other weird injuries?
Have you guys ever had to like fight anyone on stage?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, there's this one time we played this festival, and we were playing before that really shitty metalcore band, Suicide Silence.
Okay.
And Chris was actually playing guitar on this tour, playing lead guitar. And we did this thing. We'll play these big festivals, and we'll kind of like do stupid stuff to kind of prank them. So we had all these Cheerios. So we're on tour with Title Fight, and they had cereal on their roster. So we just kept, or on their like
writer.
The writer. Sorry, on their roster, on their writer. And we just kept stealing their cereal.
Okay.
And then it got to this point where we had this huge cereal fight in the van, and there was like cereal in everyone's things for months. I mean, just months.
Inside
the cuff
clothes,
of my jeans.
Yeah.
A Rice Krispie could be very invasive.
Yeah. So we went out and bought like tons of like Honey Nut Cheerios and bottles of champagne, and we were just throwing them around during this set. And so at some point in time, I got my mic cord wrapped up in the stage light, and I didn't know it, but it belonged to Suicide Silence. So they showed up at this venue, set up all their bullshit, and then left, right? So I got it wrapped up in the mic cord, pulled the mic cord, it fell, and it broke. And so this guy that was in their crew was like really pissed off about it, and there was a lot of tension within the crowd with like some of the security guards and stuff like that. So like this guy is flipping off Chris, right?
Behind my back.
Like behind his back and then to his face, this guy who works for Suicide Silence, because he's all mad that we broke this light. I didn't know I broke it, but whatever. And he's flipping Chris off, and Chris kind of looks over to his left and sees him. And he's in the middle of a solo, and without missing a note, kicks the guy.
Yeah.
Like right in the groin. And there's like 20 of our friends on stage or whatever, but this guy picks up one of the empty champagne bottles, and it was in an Andre bottle, so it's like really thick. And he like reeled back to hit Chris with it, with Chris's back turned, was gonna like brain him with this. And our friend basically stepped in and like hooked up his arm and was like, if you do that, you're going to die. Yeah. And like there was enough people, their crew kind of came up on stage and it got really tense. And we're like, if you do this, there's like 200 kids. It was in Dallas, so it was our home turf. And we're like, 200 kids are going to come over this barricade. Your whole team's going to get stomped out and someone's going to go to jail for like attempted murder. And, you know, like I had like a mic stand that was like ready to swing at this big guy and it kind of diffused and everything. And the guy had to come up and like apologize to us. But there was another time in a South by Southwest show where they pulled the stage, like the power to the whole stage.
Ugh.
And kids were like about to riot. And I had to be like, well, you can let us finish our set or we can burn your venue to the ground. And the guy was just like, fuck. And then like, let us play two more songs or whatever. But nothing like, no like drag out brawls or anything like that. You know, there's been a bar fight here or there over the years, but, you know, it's usually just people being really disrespectful. We don't go looking for trouble or anything, you know. Some drunk guy walks up to you and starts calling you a pussy or something like that, and you're like, hey, man, stop. And then they just keep going, and it's like, if you don't stop, I'm going to hit you because you're not respecting my words here, and I'm not going to let you sit there and insult me or something. And then they'll say something about my mother or some shit like that. I'm a little guy, so people think they can pick on me, but it's like, you know, my dad was kicking my ass from a young age. I ain't as scared of like some guy because he's a little bit bigger than me. But usually we're pretty good at staying out of trouble or at least diffusing things, you know.
Never know.
We're
UFC
not a violent
band, days?
But we will hold our ground if we had to.
Size means nothing.
It doesn't. Like, it's all about your focus,
you
know.
Get me in a leg lock.
Mm-hmm.
Through.
This one guy, this is actually was really funny. I was in Dallas at this bar and I met up. I had just seen two friends I hadn't seen in a while and my friend was buying us a round of shots. And this guy, one of them was a female, and she and I was talking to her. I'd known her for like 10 years. And this guy shoulders his way through me, bigger guy too, probably about your size. And he was like, out of my way, cock breath. And I was like, excuse me? What did you say? And he was like, oh, nothing, man. I just smelled some dick on your breath. And I was like, you're really funny guy. Like, I really like you. I think you're funny. And then I just headbutted him. Like, I kind of like jumped up and just broke his nose with just one little quick headbutt. And he like didn't do anything. He was just like, you know, and I took the shot and I slammed it on the ground and then I got thrown out of the bar. And
it's tough.
I'm standing outside and I was like, oh, crap, I really don't want to have to like fight this guy. And then he comes out with like a towel. But I was like, you know, you don't say that to someone. I was like, I'm just going to pop you in the nose a little. And he comes outside and he's like, oh, really? I thought you were like creeping on my friend, you know. And I was like, oh, my friend Kim that I've known for 10 years. And he was like, yeah, I just need to watch myself and like, I'm sorry. Oh, it's like, I totally deserve it and stuff. And I was like, okay, well, we're cool. Like, you obviously learned your lesson. You know, I'm sorry, but like, I've known her for a long time. So,
well, they're very depressed people who would
people
do that.
People see me
to
and they're just like,
with,
yeah, I'm going
to
fuck with that little guy.
It's
I'm
very
like,
sad,
no.
Do you find, I always wonder, like, you know, I grew up around here and like being punk and hardcore around here, like, it's not, you don't have to go very far to like find community.
Right.
And you don't like have to go very, like, it's almost, and I always wonder with people who grow up in Texas and places like you guys grew up, like, do you find, especially in all your travels, that a place like that, when you're growing up, counterculture and punk rock, like, do you think you have to like fight for it a little more? Like, do you have to stand up for it like a little more?
The generation before us, they did. Mm-hmm. So when I first started coming to shows, I saw a few Nazis get stomped out, but I would never had to get involved. And it was like one guy, early 2000s.
Okay.
You know, but around the turn of the century, I probably started going to punk shows around like 2000, 2001, but then hardcore shows more around like 02 to like 04. And by that time, there was a huge problem in Dallas for a while, and I'm sure you guys remember a few years ago about that guy getting stomped out in an old 97 show in Dallas, and he ended up paralyzed and stuff. Like, it happened in front of his daughter. That was really the literal end of that. That guy went to prison. Like, I had a friend who had to testify against him, and he was kind of freaked out. But
at an old 97 show,
yeah, of all fucking places, yeah,
insane.
Yeah. This guy, like, this dude was a noted skinhead, and I think he'd like dropped a hard R, and this guy was with his daughter and was like, hey, can you watch your language? And then guy was a fucking asshole and stomped his poor father out. And it's a terrible story. But essentially, that was kind of like really the end of that. So we didn't really have to fight a lot, and the scene collectively got along really well. Metal kids and punk kids and hardcore kids always, you know, got along and stuff like that. So I never really feel like I had to like fight for territory or anything. You know, like maybe some drunk asshole rolls up to a show and says something wrong. And the thing is that I've learned a lot of places is people think they can say whatever they want.
Yeah.
You know, people don't realize that some people will, you know, they'll have a code, but they'll fight, you know, mm-hmm. and that's kind of the way it is in Texas, at least, yeah. you know, especially with a lot of the scene out here is like, you'll get, you know, 3-4 strikes, you know, like chances before someone's like, all right, man, I'm going to hit
now
you.
I
like, you know, most
fight.
Of the yeah. fights I've seen, someone is literally like, I don't want to kick your ass, but I'm going to kick your ass if yeah. you don't stop. And then it just boils over. So we got lucky coming like from a pretty well protected, you know, scene, and we haven't, you know, dealt with a whole lot of incursions of anything like that, even kind of rallies and stuff like that. You know, when we were in Richmond, coming from Virginia Beach heading to Baltimore, there was a protest that day, and then wasn't there one in Baltimore as well? And then there was like the Juggalo March in DC. So there's all this stuff going on out here. Dallas, we tried to remove, I think a General Lee monument, and then some guy got an injunction and kept it like it's still up or something like that. But nothing too crazy in Texas yet.
That's
so
what, I'm from Cleveland,
yeah,
and I felt like the Cleveland scene was just all about shit talking. So I felt like there weren't that yeah. many fights, but I like everyone's like a professional shit talker,
right? Oh yeah, yeah. People from Ohio know how to fucking roast people, and I really always respected that. Yeah. Oh, what was I going to say? Man.
That's why Cleveland couldn't come to New York.
Yeah.
For a long yeah. time.
That was a thing, right? Well, yeah, I think yeah. Cleveland couldn't go to a lot of places for
yeah,
a while.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
there was a big new... So we talked about it with some. I think maybe Charlie.
Probably
from
Charlie. Maybe Roger.
Yeah,
too.
Right.
We've had
yeah.
a couple cool...
Charlie's awesome. I love
yeah,
Charlie.
Yeah, yeah, Charlie is
but
a
there,
great
yeah,
dude.
It was pretty deep because I mean, I didn't really know the details as a kid, but I was super stoked to go to this one Integrity Starkweather show.
Yeah.
And like... all of the shows got canceled
mm-hmm.
only here, only
right.
like New York and Philly and that area. And it was because of like, if you come here, like we're going to murder you.
Yeah.
Kind of
we've
DMS
we always loved-
at the time was like, you really guff so much, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, they kind of mm-hmm. did what they said. So mm-hmm.
I think you still do.
I mean,
nod your head. Yes. Cause we don't want to get
anyways.
Yeah. Yes. Moving on.
So can you tell me, I'm super stoked about the idea that you guys refused to use double kick drum.
Mm.
And
yeah,
is this like, did you set this rule?
No. I mean, I started playing drums because, or like learning punk drums. So it was like never really in my repertoire. And I tried to learn and it just like wasn't clicking.
Okay.
And I kind of would disguise that as being like, fuck double bass. I don't really think it's cool. But there are some bands that I think use it very tastefully, like maybe Obituary.
We're not anti-double bass.
Oh, okay.
But this actually...
I mean, I'll tell you this. I'm never going to use it for this band.
Yeah.
And I think it like makes our band sound like what it sounds like.
Sure. Yeah. It roots it in, you know, punk and rock and roll and stuff like that. And he gets, you know, when we go on tours with bigger bands and they see his kit, they're like, man, that's it? That's your kit?
They're like,
and
I don't know where to go on
and
this
they,
thing.
They think it's fucking cool, though. They're yeah. like, man, that's respect, you know? But, like, when I first started the band, I specifically didn't want it in there. And with our first drummer, I told him that, and we worked around it and stuff. But, like, Chris, I remember when I sent you, like, some of the Armageddon Blues tracks, you were like, I love that there's, like, no double bass in this and stuff like that. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I never really want to have it. And we just have stuck with that ever since, you know? So
I don't really think there's much that we could do yeah, to it that would yeah, add something yeah. that
right,
needs
right.
to be there or isn't already there.
Sure.
It would just be a little too much, you know, a little
gotcha.
Too much for our band. But, yeah,
I like
we're,
it.
You know, not anti that, but just for our band. We'll never use it.
You guys are almost like the mutants in X-Men who are like Magneto was right, you know, like the ones who are like wearing metal, but like fuck double
yeah,
kicks.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
It's nice.
It's a very traditional outlook. I just think that that's what, you know, really helps drive some of the riffs and the music and stuff like that. It makes it very kind of like galloping and, you know, head nodding kind of stuff. You know, it's, I don't know. It just works for us, you know.
Yeah. You'd rather.
And I think it also pushes us to do more interesting things,
yeah,
with certain riffs and stuff like that. Right. You know,
it's more like rewarding to try to do more with less.
Yeah,
sure.
Than it would
absolutely
be to be like, what if I got this new thing and tried to use it as much as possible.
So you're not going to add that section of rotos and splashes? And
I never
now
said
hold on.
That.
We got to get the rack system in.
Yes.
You know, Arthur's been loving the roto toms. Our producer has been like forcing roto toms on like the last three bands he's recorded with.
Shit.
He did the new Trapped Under Ice and there's like roto toms all over the record.
They rotoed?
They rotoed.
Wow.
They rotoed. They did.
Wild.
They did. Yeah.
Oh my god,
that's awesome.
Yeah. I think there's definitely Arthur did tell me there's roto all over the new like Cavalera Brothers record that's coming out.
Could but of course that. There is.
Yeah,
but
of course there is.
That makes sense.
But less like tribal stuff, more like wild fills and stuff. I don't know.
Tribal roto.
Tribal
that's
roto.
A good band name. Brad, you feel like getting back in the game, baby?
Do you feel like, I mean, with all this stuff kind of going on in the world right now, like obviously, like you guys are in some ways a political band.
Yeah, definitely. I would say we are, for sure.
Do you feel like it's like a weird time to be doing that?
The biggest thing is kind of weighing like the level of responsibility I should take. Like now that I have a platform, because I don't consider myself a particularly articulate person. I don't think I could get up there and make a very like true, deep political statement that I would be happy with. You know, like touring with Napalm Death, Barney has that like on lock. He gets up there and it's well thought out and it's well said, even if the rest of his band doesn't even like agree with him, because he's vegan and does like all like everything, like even his phone, his TV, his laptop is all like the most like cruelty free stuff. And it really like made me think a lot, like what level of responsibility do I really need to take on, and like is it my place to be trying to educate people? Or like, so I kind of take a very broad approach to it. I tell people, if you're going to believe in something, be able to argue it, you know. Like I feel pretty confident, like, you know, when I write songs like Divine Apprehension or something like that, it's basically I think I could sit down with a Christian and blow their worldview away, you know, if they have an open mind and I can, you know, sort of, you know, pick away at their faith a little bit. That's a lot of what a lot of that is. And I just want to challenge the way people look at the world, or if they settle in something and think that they've got it all figured out. Because for me, I just roll with it that life is a mystery and that you kind of got to let it be. There's a certain level, you know, there's things that we'll never know for sure, you know. So to me, it's hard to get out there and be really, really preachy. But, you know, there's like really basic stuff, you know, like, we make sure that, you know, if there's some kind of homophobic stuff going down, we shut it down. Anything racist. You know, when we did the Lamb of God Anthrax tour, there was some casual racists out there. And, you know, if some guy said something sketchy in front of us, we usually had a good deflection. Actually, one of them was like Chris or Hood, we would kiss each other on the mouth. And it would just drive those people away. And it was like, you know, we don't want those people as fans. Or at least if they're going to come in. And I've had great talks with people who don't agree with my views. And I've had really enlightening conversations with them. But it's hard for me just because I just don't think I've got it all figured out. So who am I to, like, tell these people how they should behave? But there's some stuff to me that is so obvious. Like, you know, I know it sounds idealistic, but, like, the fact that people give a shit about, you know, like people have problems with like sexuality and racism and stuff like that, or like even like simple things like jealousy. It's like that stuff I got over in high school, you know, and I stay conscious about it and I try and like check my privilege and things like that. But there's like, you know, if people really had the mindset of trying to save the world, like if it was like some Watchmen shit where we knew like the world was going to end, you know, because some aliens were going to kill us or something like that. And it was like, or if some alien life form came down and was like, if you guys don't get your shit together in 20 years, we're going to blow up your fucking planet. Everyone would figure it out. We'd solve world hunger. We'd figure out everything, or we'd blow ourselves up, you know, one or the other. But I believe that everyone could get it together, and that would create jobs. If you're talking about feeding people, that's still a job. The thing we were talking about with the wave energy stuff, you know, you have people in manufacturing again. Like, there's always going to be jobs created to fit the needs of other people, but it's people just don't want to be altruistic. You know, they want to,
I wonder,
you know, make money. And I don't have a problem with people having millions of dollars. I think there's such a thing as having too much money, and I'm not exactly sure where that line is, but it's something worth examining. You know, you can be addicted to anything. You can be addicted to money, and it's just sure. It's if not more dangerous than most vices, because you're, you know, expressing your power and your psychosis from being addicted to money onto other people. You know?
Do you feel the same way about religion? Because I found it, you know, it's an interesting thing I hear sometimes about, and you even mentioned it earlier, where you would have a conversation where you're like, I feel so confident in my knowledge of the converse ideas to Christianity or something, right, that I'd love to sit down and pick at a Christian's faith. But like, how necessary for this idea that like a universalist idea that like actually like somehow nearly 7 billion people can get along.
Right.
Like, so there is a reality to the fact that those people are going to exist with their ideals.
Sure.
Regardless of what you say or not.
Yeah.
And like, do you have to find a way to live with these people? Or are you on like a mission to change their minds?
Well, I'm not really on a mission to change people's minds. Like, let me say this. I was raised Catholic, mm-hmm, and I never believed it. Like, even from a young age, just I didn't have that leap of faith but what I did learn, because I went to really good schools that kind of had a liberal leaning, was, you know, Jesus at least had a good morality about him, you know, and if most Christians really listened to what he'd have to say, they would have a much higher opinion of the religion overall, because he was pretty open-minded about everything. And if like the stuff that they says was true about him sort of having concubines and stuff, he's clearly a pretty sexually liberal guy too, you know, like all these notions that people have are really just stuff that's projected onto his image.
Sure.
But if you really know what he was about, he was about as, you know, commie as it gets, you know.
Well, yeah.
And so my thing is if you're not, you can be a spiritual person. I'm a spiritual person, but mine's a very abstract thing where I just don't think that I think it's arrogant to believe that we're the most highly evolved life forms in the universe, you know. And does it mean that like our life came from a higher source? I don't know. But I still think that there's a level of consciousness or being that we still have a lot to learn.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I tell people is like the most basic thing that separates us from animals is our ability to learn, you know. And when you stop wanting to learn, when you think that you've got life figured out, that's where you start doing damage, you know, whether it's physical or symbolic violence or whatever, because you're trying to force your idealistic worldview onto other people. And that's where I really start to draw the line, because I've got plenty of friends who are Christian or, you know, Jewish or whatever, and really believe it. And that's fine, but they have great hearts and they don't mind, you know, like they don't ever try and force anything on me. They don't mind that, you know, because I don't consider myself atheist and I'm not necessarily agnostic either. But as long as it's a personal thing, and if you want to have communion with people in a church and celebrate that experience, fine by me too. But when it comes to being an oppressive, you know, power situation, that's where it's got to stop. And especially, you know, all the mega churches and stuff like that. And I've had people ask me, why do you blast Christianity? Why don't you blast other religions? I was like, well, that's the dominant religion where I come from. And yeah, that's where, sure, I see the most violence.
Your perspective.
That's the world I grew up,
right,
in, you know,
yeah,
like, and I see that violence and I see people getting taken advantage of, you know, Joel Alstein duping people and taking their money. And the fact that people haven't caught on to that is just mind blowing to me. So if I can get people to, you know, question what they think is so true and so real, then I feel like I've done a good job. And people question mine, and it's awesome. I love having my views challenged, you know.
What about, like, you talk a lot about like redistribution of wealth, mm-hmm, and things like that. Like, that's another thing I wonder. It's like that thing that, idealistically, it sounds terrific that we have,
right,
so much and that we separated amongst this stuff. But like, how do we like physically get from A to B? Because you can't just like sit down with somebody with $1 billion and be like, listen, man,
yeah,
this is what I think. And like, right, your words are just so impressive that he's going to be like, you're right. Just all this shit. Here we go. Like, it's just not going to happen.
It's not. And I know that. And like, you know, I can daydream about that all day.
So is violence like necessary to achieve it?
Yeah, that's really tough too, because, you know, like, I'm not an economic expert, but, you know, like, I've seen plenty of people throw out great ideas of ways to redistribute it. Like Bernie Sanders has said plenty of smart, reasonable stuff when it comes to taxing. And there's people who are far smarter than me who could figure out how to redistribute wealth fairly. But you're right. It's how do we get, you know, the super rich to be like, you're right, I don't need $4 billion. You know, and I don't know how to make people feel that. Maybe that is something where we have to kind of storm the gates but you know, like you think about, like, we have monopoly law here and it's never used, but there's corporations so clearly run everything, you know, and like that's just a simple corruption right there. Like, it, break apart some of these monopolies and give the market some competition, things like that. And I know that's, again, complicated, but I'm not the expert. But I can still sit there and say, like, this is possible.
Sure. You know,
this does make sense. This works, or something like that. I actually remember when I was a little kid, I was on the way to school with my dad, and I was talking about money with him, and I basically, like, said something like, well, why can't people trade stuff? And my dad was like, that's communism, and it doesn't fucking work. And I was like, okay. But, you know, we live in a closet socialist country.
Right.
What is Social Security? What is Medicaid? Mm-hmm. You know, like, what is welfare and things like that?
Roads, dude.
The highway system is completely
socialist.
Public transit, all that stuff. Yeah. You know, like, it's crazy to me that it's such a, like, a boogeyman word to say socialist. But we already live in a socialist, capitalist hybrid. So why don't we just embrace it more and make it work? And that's, like, you know, that's what, like, you know, Bernie seems to say. I like Slavoj Zizek a lot. He writes some pretty cool stuff about that. And I was really into Foucault. He says some similar things. But Foucault also is like, I don't have the solutions. I can just, you know, deconstruct what's wrong, which is what I typically like to do, too. You know, I'm not much of a solutions guy, but I can examine stuff and at least be like, well, that's fucked up, and kind of tell you why, at least.
Sure.
You know, I have a lot of really great conversations with my dad because he's like economically conservative but very socially liberal. So we kind of get into stuff like that all the time. And it challenges me to, like, think of how things could play out. But, you know, I don't know. I'm pretty convinced that we're fucked. To get down to it, I'm pretty convinced that we're fucked. I don't know if there's any turning back.
I've seen on Twitter, like, sometimes you'll post stuff that I'm like, oh, I agree with this, but, like, I don't think I would post this because it's just going to be a bunch of people arguing.
Sure. A lot, like, so, well, not a lot of people know, like, my Twitter is my personal one's very incognito.
Oh, gotcha.
So, like, most of the people who follow me are people that I know, and then there's, like, some people who get lucky and figure out that it's me. But, like, you know, that's really where I'll dump some more, like, radical stuff that I don't want the band to have to feel like they defend or something like that. And that's sort of where I can be a little more subversive, I guess, if I want to be. And I'll post stuff that I don't even fully agree with, but at least challenges, like, thinking in such a way that, you know, or at least, like, something that makes me contemplate an issue or something like that. So, but, you know, most people don't know about my personal account, and it's private and everything. Just because, you know, I don't want to get the band in any trouble for, like, anything that I might say. And not that I say anything really edgy or anything, but I just don't, you know, they're not as political as I am. But I'm writing the songs about what I want to write about. And by default, that's what they end up becoming about. And I'm not going to back down from that. You know, I don't really preach on stage or anything, but I tell people, you know, if you're interested, read the lyrics, or, like, you know, almost everything has some kind of, like, book or, like, ideological reference or something like that, you know. I just mask it a lot more in kind of allegory and lyrical poetry and stuff like that. But there's deep stuff there for people to dive into if they want to. And then there's just the kind of catchy, you know, swing of the axe kind of just fun stuff. But that's a completely allegorical song about how people are comfortable with paying to be numb in death, you know, like, whether it's watching TV or growing fat, eating fried chicken, or doing drugs or something like that. Like, you know, America will happily peddle you death, you know, a six pack at a time.
Sure.
And that's basically what that song is about, is people, you know, happily ready to get executed, have their head cut off or whatever, if it means death is painless for them. So, but, you know, I try to make it sound like a catchy metal song that could be about whatever you want it to be. So I let the people who want to learn more about them, ask those kind of questions and stuff like that, rather than shoving it down anyone's throat. So, you know, if we see something that's egregious or, you know, some behavior that we can't condone, we'll call people out about it. But, you know, as long as, you know, people are there and accepting of each other and having a good time, we want everybody to come to our shows, even if that means, like, you know, I'm not going to sit there and be like, oh, if you voted for Donald Trump, don't bother coming to our shows. Because you might come to a show and get challenged on something. And that's the kind of goal that I want. Or we might have a good conversation and leave saying agree to disagree, but it was really nice to meet you, you know?
How do you think you would do, like, in a room alone with him for, like, 5 minutes?
Who? Donald Trump?
Trumpy.
Oh, I just whoop his fucking ass up and down
fight?
The room.
You just
oh,
fight?
Yeah, no worries. I just beat his all that.
Wow.
That was so good.
My favorite part may be the rule of five.
Fuck. There's so many parts in there. The rule of five is
Planet Five.
Purely mythological. There's no way. There's just no way.
I don't know, man.
There's no way.
You don't
maybe
think,
if booze you and beer
you don't think
are
you,
separate.
No, that falls under the alcohol umbrella.
Dude,
for
there's
sure.
No way, there's you, no way to do it.
You never went to Planet Five back
are
in the goose?
Are you kidding me? No. I. You know what? I'm a guy that likes purity. I like to drink my liquor straight. I like a good bourbon, sometimes with a little piece of ice. I'm not going to ruin a good high by layering it.
Yeah, that's fair.
you how are you going to know what you're enjoying?
I don't know. I was trying to think about it. I don't think I have either, because there's a lot of stuff that is just not on the table for me. So I don't think I've done it. I've probably been to like Planet 3, maybe Planet 4. But yeah. But regardless, that was an amazing podcast. Thank you so much to Riley and Chris for coming by.
They're on tour now.
Power Trip is on tour right now as we speak. They're, I believe they're on the West Coast. They're on tour with Cannibal Corpse, and that's a North American tour that goes through the whole month. I think it's like 4 or 5 weeks. So check it out. If Power Trip's coming through with Cannibal Corpse, go to the show. Definitely check out their last album, Nightmare Logic. It's a great record. Yeah, thanks, Riley, for Chris, for making time before the obituary show to do this. Thank you to Adam Mott, their manager, for helping make this happen.
Thanks again, Pulse Music, for hosting all of our podcasts.
Thanks again to Pulse Music for hosting all of our podcasts.
I'm going to throw out another little plug for my label, soundwag.com, because I think my latest release from The Worried, while nothing like Power Trip, is the closest. There, I think fans of Power Trip will like the record. So
yeah.
Go check it out. You can get it anywhere, Spotify, any streaming service, or
via Soundwag.
Soundwag.com will give you some links. Yeah,
get some links there. Also, shout out to Bailey at Grandstand PR for setting this up as well.
Thanks, Bailey. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, and thank you to all our Patreons, Venmoers, and PayPalers out there.
Hell yeah. Couldn't do it without you, seriously.
Could not do it without you. Me and Brad just recorded a bonus episode.
Yeah, if you want to hear it, you got to join.
Patreon. If you want to join, you can join, I think, for what, like $1, $5 or something.
Dollar just means that you love us.
Yeah.
Doesn't get you anything, but starting at like $3...
Yeah.
You can get early access at $5. You can get the bonus episodes.
Yeah.
And so you'll there's going to be some swag and stuff too.
Yeah. We're working on some more incentives. But yeah, as of now, you're getting the bonus episodes. You're getting episodes early on Monday. You don't have to
some
wait till Wednesday.
Some ridiculous outtakes.
So you're getting some amazing outtakes. There's a bunch we have with Laura Jane Grace that we have like a 20 minutes of outtakes with her. I don't know why.
I put Fleshlight up too.
Oh, great. Beautiful. So it's mostly just highbrow intellectual stuff. But yeah, so thank you to everyone sincerely for being our Patreons, anyone who's Venmo'd us and that kind of stuff too as well. We really appreciate your support. Thanks again to Power Trip, and we'll be back, depending on what kind of listener you are, we'll be back on Monday or Wednesday. Who knows? But yeah, we'll be back with another podcast next week. Thanks.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.